These were arranged in process sequence adjacent to each other in a fabrication area for each of the major components, with the completed components often moving a short distance across the aisle to the point of final assembly. By contrast, the Rouge had mighty washing systems, massive painting systems, an enormous stamping shop, a vast welding shop, etc., to work on many part numbers for many components and to crank out millions of piece parts on machines running at very high speeds. These parts were transferred through the Rouge complex from one production step to the next on miles of conveyors and were then shipped to final assembly plants across the world, numbering more than 50 by the late 1920s. To make this system work, the Rouge needed a mighty master schedule to tell each of the process cities what to do next, as every part traveled considerable distances from one process step to the next. When the complex was nearing full public unveiling toward the end of 1926, Ford wrote a famous article for the Encyclopedia Britannica, in which he gave his new concept the name it still bears, mass production. Taichi Ono and the other innovators at post-war Toyota, therefore, really did gain their starting point from Henry Ford, but perhaps more from Highland Park than from the Rouge. Our colleague John Shook found an old copy of Ford Methods and the Ford Shops in the Toyota archives in Toyota City, suggesting that Toyota was well aware of the first Henry Ford. The Toyota team then made a critical leap at the point where Ford took a wrong turn. They found ways to turn out products in continuous, often single-piece flow, but in market conditions totally different from Ford's. Unlike Ford at Highland Park, where every Model T chassis was identical, Toyota needed to produce products in high variety for a fragmented domestic market. And Toyota could not estimate demand accurately in a gyrating Japanese economy. By comparison, at Highland Park, Ford for a decade could immediately sell everything he could make. Finally, model lives were short in Japan, and setup time for entirely new models also needed to be short. This was totally different from conditions at Highland Park. There, the basic product continued in production for 19 years. The transition from the Model T to the Model A required a 9-month shutdown of the whole Ford Motor Company. It also meant the retirement of the Highland Park plant, as most production of components was moved to the Rouge and most final assembly was moved to points around the world. Toyota's achievement in creating continuous flow in conditions of high variety, market volatility, and short product lives was truly brilliant, but it rested more firmly on Henry Ford's shoulders at Highland Park than we realized. This fact makes the continuing decline of the Ford Motor Company in recent years even sadder to watch. Toyota has always viewed itself as the industrial descendant of Ford. And when we wrote Machine, the Ford Motor Company was showing early signs of regaining its way by embracing lean production. It was copying Toyota, just as it had previously copied GM to save itself in the late 1940s. Alas, the lean momentum of the late 1980s was lost in the 1990s with catastrophic results. The second point we would make if writing Machine today concerns teams, the division of labor, and the role of managers. We talk at many points in Machine about problem solving by work teams, as if this were a large fraction of their work. Similarly, we often talk about job rotation among professionals, as if every manager at Toyota were a Renaissance man, moving from function to function through a long career. Finally, we hardly mention the role of line managers in production, design, procurement, and sales. With nearly 20 years hindsight, we now know that the problem-solving work by teams can be very helpful for companies, but that this is the last portion of a lean system that Toyota implements. As Taichi Ono noted, without standards, there can be no Kaizen. The work process itself, along with the management process, must be absolutely standardized by managers and by manufacturing and industrial engineers as well, before a work team can have any hope of improving it. Standardization in this context means creating a precise and commonly understood way to conduct every essential step in every process. We also know that problem solving by managers is a much larger fraction of their job than we had realized. Managers in Toyota are taught from the beginning of their career how to identify a problem in the area they are managing. The manager then determines the aspects of the process that are currently causing the problem and envisions a better process that should be able to solve the problem. Finally, the manager develops an implementation plan, measures the results, and adjusts the process as necessary. This, of course, is the plan, do, check, act improvement process Toyota learned from W. Edwards Deming. Toyota's contribution was to turn it into the superlative management tool, now called A3 analysis. In addition, we now know that Toyota is a much more functional company than we had realized in terms of career paths. Most professionals work through their careers in one specialty, just as in a traditional mass production organization. The difference is not in the career paths, but in the management of the horizontal connectivity across the different functions. And this gets us to our biggest misunderstanding. We thought as of 1990 that most employees in a lean firm like Toyota were assigned to a product development team or a production team for the life of the project/product, and that they obeyed the SHUSA, chief engineer/project leader, or KACHO, line manager, because of his control of their career path. In fact, employees do stick with projects, but personnel papers never move, and employees follow the leader because he leads. The real role for the product and process leader is to take responsibility for product development and production as supported by bulletproof design and production processes developed within the functions. It turns out that functions can be very effective in cooperating cross-functionally with team leaders when the needs of the product are accurately stated, processes are adhered to, everything goes as it should, and the project or process leader can get the attention of higher management if it doesn't. We are again indebted to our colleague John Shook, who worked at Toyota in Toyota City for a number of years, for these insights. This is actually good news for organizations trying to introduce lean production. As of 1990, we believed that to make a breakthrough, firms needed to be turned practically on their sides, that the horizontal flow of value across functions required drastic organizational change. Now we know that the key is not the organization chart, but the behavior of the project leader, such as the chief engineer in product development, and of the function leaders as they jointly solve problems. A third general point we would make in a different way is about process technology. We didn't know enough to make the point that Henry Ford in his flow production phase at Highland Park and Toyota at most points in its history have concentrated on building process machinery in small increments of capacity, installing machines in process sequence, often in cellular layouts, and keeping them as simple as possible, even if this has meant using more touch labor for materials handling. Ford lost its way at the Rouge, and even Toyota has wobbled at times. In the automation overkill at the Tahara assembly plant in Japan, for example, and the Chicago parts distribution warehouse in the 1990s. But the general path to success has emphasized minimizing throughput time for the whole sequence of production steps while maximizing machine capability and availability, qualities that Toyota jointly calls stability, as opposed to machine utilization. The capital investment and the amount of labor needed to make a product invariably fall if manufacturing system designers keep their eyes on speeding flow and eliminating waste. However, our bold prediction that most touch labor in automotive manufacturing would be eliminated by the end of the 1990s was pure dreaming based on incomplete understanding of the lean production system we were describing. In practice, there has been very little additional automation of final assembly since 1990, and the same holds in component assembly. While robots are flexible and reprogrammable in theory, well-trained production associates are more flexible and reprogrammable in practice, so Toyota never automates unless absolutely necessary. A fourth point we would make differently concerns the role of industrial finance. We had been greatly impressed by the success of the Sumitomo Bank in revitalizing Mazda after 1973, only briefly, as it turned out, and were dismayed by the seeming inability of American financing sources to do much to rejuvenate Chrysler in the 1980s. We therefore concluded that patient capital in the form of the horizontal keiretsu in Japan, tightly linking the core bank with firms in many sectors, was a giant leap in industrial practice. Similarly, we embraced the notion that collaborative relations between firms and their suppliers were greatly facilitated by interlocking equity in vertical keiretsu, that is, in supplier groups replacing the old-fashioned vertical integration of the General Motors model. What we learned in the 1990s is what Phil Caldwell, the retired chairman of Ford, quietly told us just after Machine came out. No system of capital allocation makes much difference if the fundamental processes of a business are not being managed properly, and financiers are unlikely to understand these processes outside of their own business, if there. Even worse, the presence of large financial reserves within the keiretsu generally damps interest in the hard work of fixing the fundamentals of troubled businesses. As the 1990s progressed, it became apparent that interlocking Japanese equity, tying banks and other financial organizations to a network of industrial firms in many sectors, was often an impediment to necessary change in Japan. Thus, the horizontal keiretsu now appear to be about as effective for creating value as conglomerates were in the West in the 1970s and 1980s. That said, there is still an open question about the vertical keiretsu, like the Toyota and Nissan supplier groups. At Nissan, obvious reforms in underperforming suppliers were deferred to the point of catastrophe, as the company fell under the control of Renault, an outcome we would never have predicted as of 1990. Yet the Toyota supplier group has been a major part of Toyota's success. Indeed, Toyota's biggest struggle in expanding globally has been to find foreign suppliers who participate in process improvement with the same can-do spirit as Toyota's traditional suppliers. The main difference between Toyota's and Nissan's results in managing suppliers has not been in the structure of the supplier group, but rather in Toyota's relentless oversight of every design, production, and logistics process by asking hard questions about performance every day. Nissan, by contrast, seems to have created a comfortable club where poor performance was forgiven to maintain group harmony. What we still lack as lean production diffuses across the world is a stable way for firms and independent suppliers sharing product value streams to work together to rigorously optimize the performance of the whole, not just the parts. Beyond these general points, there are a number of places where small modifications in fact and interpretation would be helpful. Given the large audience this book has found with management and engineering students and scholars over the past 15 years, it seems only fair to provide a brief errata sheet for those interested in the fine-grained details of lean production. Setups. We were less clear than we should have been about the issue of setups. What we were referring to was setups of production machinery to run different part numbers, not the time and effort needed to insert materials in a machine to make the next piece of the same part number. Some of the confusion was caused by the fact that in Ford's early years at Highland Park, there were very few setups. Most machines were dedicated for years to a single part number for a standardized product with no options. Thus, it was only when Ford later needed to run many part numbers through the same high-speed machines that the setup issue emerged, and Ford made little progress in addressing it. Quick changeovers. We are off by about 10 years on the famous 3-minute die changes on large stamping presses at Toyota. Having subsequently met some of those present when the final breakthroughs were made, we now believe that these ultra-quick die changes on the largest presses were not perfected until the late 1960s. This does not alter the fact that the effort to reduce setup times started many years earlier, as we reported. Ono's learning process. We were also off by 10 years on Taichi Ono's travels. We now know that he never visited the United States before 1955. His famous concept of the supermarket for parts provided by the next upstream process was based on stories he had heard from other travelers and from observing American-style supermarkets then opening in Japan, not on his own direct observations of U.S. grocery stores. Production control. Our explanation about how the different parts of a production process know what to do needs a bit of Kaizen. Ono's production control system is properly called Just-in-Time, JIT, or the right part at the right time in the right amount. More recently, the term most commonly applied is a pull system. Kanban is just the name for the instruction cards for fetching materials from a parts buffer just upstream or telling the next upstream process to make more parts. It is a tool for achieving pull. A bit of additional Kaizen is needed where we tell the listener that the empty tub for holding parts is itself the Kanban sent back to the previous step to trigger production, meaning there is no need for a Kanban instruction card. While it is possible in a few situations to use a tub or container as both the conveyance device and the signal, the Kanban, to deliver or produce more parts, this only works well when the previous step is directly adjacent to the next step and is working exclusively for that customer. Most pull applications are more complex and require either Kanban cards or some other form of signal to trigger production at the next upstream process. Thus, the listener will kindly ignore our advice to send empty parts boxes back from the assembler to the remotely located supplier as the signal to make more parts. We are at least consoled by the knowledge that Ono himself experimented with this idea in the 1950s before realizing it wouldn't work. Send Kanban or electronic signals, now often called electronic Kanban, instead. A final bit of Kaizen is needed where we stated that Ono's JIT eliminated practically all inventories. In fact, Toyota's JIT is far from a zero inventory system, because some inventory, what Toyota calls standard inventory, is still needed in practically every production process, typically near the end. This inventory is proportional to the volatility of orders from the customer and to the stability of the upstream process steps delivering what is needed. While Toyota does try to smooth orders from the customer and to make its upstream processes the most stable in the world, some inventories are still needed. Otherwise, a sudden spike in customer demand or a sudden failure to deliver on time by an upstream production step would cause Toyota to disappoint its customers in its ability to deliver on the promise date. This is never acceptable. However, the next point, that Toyota continually tries to reduce inventories to put pressure on the whole production system to improve, is still valid and critical. The question is not whether to reduce inventories over time, but how. Many would-be lean firms have learned that simply eliminating most inventories far in advance of reduced order volatility or enhanced upstream stability leads to pain without gain. Heijunka. Our discussion of Heijunka tells only half the story. Heijunka is concerned with smoothing the aggregate level of production from day to day and week to week. But we failed to mention the often more important task for Heijunka of smoothing the mix of products within a steady total volume. The simplest example is the old-fashioned mass producer making Model A and Model B in roughly equal proportions. The producer would make a day, a week, or even a month's worth of Model A, and then change over to an equal run of Model B. The large batches of each model produced eliminate the need for almost all setups and give high machine utilization, a key metric in standard cost accounting systems. The hidden costs, of course, are extra inventory in the production system, long lags in catching quality problems, and long lead times. The lean approach, if setup times could be reduced to zero, would be to produce parts in the sequence A-B-A-B-A-B-A-B, so that no waves of orders are sent back upstream. Production is much closer to actual customer requirements, and inventories are minimized. In practice, some batching is often still required due to the nature of technologies, but a lean producer wants to steadily reduce batch sizes whenever possible to make small amounts of each item frequently in proportion to customer demand. We'll end our enumeration of what we have learned by noting two important points about lean production that we failed to cover. Machine provides little practical guidance on how to convert a mass producer to a lean enterprise truly able to solve customer problems. And it provides little help with the technical details of creating pull, introducing flow, and analyzing value streams for waste. These are topics too lengthy to cover in a short afterword. However, in the years since Machine, two of us, Dan Jones and Jim Womack, have addressed these issues at length in subsequent volumes. Lean Thinking, 1996, second edition, 2003, explores in detail the steps needed to transform a mass production business like General Motors into a lean enterprise like Toyota. Lean Solutions, 2005, carries analysis of the value-creating process all the way to the customer, showing that at every step, consumers perform a consumption process to solve their problems, and the provider's provision process must be synchronized. Yet this synchronization currently rarely happens. Fortunately, process analysis tools pioneered by Toyota and other lean firms can be adapted to solve both the consumer's and the provider's problems. Together, these three volumes provide a trilogy of lean thinking and practice. We have also addressed the technical challenges of lean implementation with a series of workbooks prepared by Dan Jones's Lean Enterprise Academy in the United Kingdom and Jim Womack's Lean Enterprise Institute in the United States. In the meantime, Dan Roos has established the Engineering Systems Division at MIT, an interdisciplinary unit which incorporates academic and research units involved with lean production. We believe that our subsequent work and that of many other authors has now supplied most of the lean tools needed for dramatically improving product design, supply chain management, production operations, and customer relations. The real challenge is getting managers to use them. We hope that listeners of Machine will seize the opportunity. The Machine That Changed the World, The Story of Lean Production, Toyota's Secret Weapon in the Global Car Wars That Is Now Revolutionizing World Industry, was written by James P. Womack, Daniel T. Jones, and Daniel Roos, and read by Fred Sanders. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.